Chapter 3, The Evidence of Mammals.
Evolution sticker shock. Imagine the shock in learning that in Cobb County, Georgia, the school district has put stickers on biology textbooks declaring evolution is a theory, not a fact. This is not just a shot across the bow of modern scientific thought. It's a body blow right smack in the middle of our double helix. Those who won the battle for stickers in Georgia, and who are making similar efforts in many other states around the country, would claim scientific validity for something they call intelligent design. This theory holds that biologically, life is so irreducibly complex it cannot be explained by natural selection acting on DNA over millions of years, and must therefore be the product of an intelligent designer, namely God. Despite the obvious objection that intelligent design is not science, its proponents have begun to gain traction. According to a report in Science earlier this year, proposals to encourage the teaching of creationism have been advanced in 37 states since 2001. Right now, evolution is a major component of our country's national science education standards and the Scholastic Achievement Test. Are we prepared to imagine a science curriculum that dilutes or eliminates the unifying principle of biology in the service of non-scientific ideology? Those stickers are a worrisome step in that direction. Allowing personal and non-scientific ideology into our science classrooms would do profound damage to the future of science and medicine.
Now, folks, once again, I don't know about you, but I sure find it interesting how this writer, a scientist even, could actually say that intelligent design is not scientific. I mean, would we see the last two chapters? It's precisely because of scientific data that many scientists were led into believing in intelligent design, right? Exactly. But that's not all. We've also been seeing that those who suppress the truth, like those who don't want those warning stickers in the textbooks, are actually doing what? They're actually storing up the wrath of God. And how many of you would say that's probably not a good thing to do? Therefore, in order to help you and I to become the most effective witnesses we can for Jesus Christ, and help these folks out, that's right, we're going to continue in our study called, The Witness of Creation. And what we're doing is taking a look at the five different evidences of creation that God has left behind for us, showing us that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal, intimate relationship with Him, the Creator of the universe. And the first evidence God left behind for us showing us this amazing truth is the evidence of an intelligent creation. And so far we've seen three evidences of an intelligent creator designing our intelligent world, and that was the evidence of the universe and, in the last chapter, the evidence of the solar system and the evidence of the human body. And there we saw several scientific facts about our solar system and our bodies, which clearly showed they not only were, but they had to be intelligently designed by an intelligent designer. Why? Because anybody who didn't fall out of the stupid tree and hit every branch on the way down knows that design implies a what? A designer, right? And how many of you'd say when it comes to life it had to be God? Hey, you're so intelligent. But that's right, believe it or not, did you know the universe, solar system, and human body are not the only evidences we see of an intelligent creator designing our intelligent world? The fourth evidence of an intelligent creator designing our intelligent world is the evidence from the animal kingdom. But hey, don't take my word for it. Let's listen to God's.
Genesis 1:24-25. And God said, "Let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creatures that move along the ground, and wild animals, each according to its kind." And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good.
Now, folks, according to our text, I think it's pretty clear. The Bible says that God not only created the whole animal kingdom, but He what? He did it in one literal day, right? But the problem is, what does evolution teach? They don't say, look at all the animals God created on the earth. Are you kidding? They say, look at all the animals a cosmic accident gave birth, right? Therefore, I'd say we better take a look at not just the scriptural evidence but the scientific evidence of the animal kingdom and see just who's telling the truth. How about you? And folks, it's pretty obvious. The first group of animals showing God's intelligent design is the large mammals. People, we're going to take a look at some interesting scientific facts about just a few of the larger sized mammals out there, and you tell me if they could ever have accidentally been birthed.
The giraffe. Charles Darwin wrote in his Origin of the Species that the giraffe was just a regular animal that grew a long neck to reach the higher branches for food. But the question is this. Could a giraffe evolve a long neck? You be the judge. First of all, the neck of the giraffe is about 6 feet long, which means just bending over, its brain could explode from the high amount of pressure. So how does it stay alive? Well, it just so happens that the giraffe has the most powerful heart in the animal kingdom, weighing in at 25 pounds, being 2 feet long with walls up to 3 inches thick. And it just so happens to come equipped with 4 features to keep the massive pressure from its massive heart from exploding from its massive neck while bending over to take a drink of water. 1. The giraffe has in his jugular veins a series of one-way check valves that immediately close as soon as the head is lowered. But this puts way too much blood in carotid artery, so what's it do? Well, 2. That extra blood is immediately pushed into a special spongy tissue located near the brain, which absorbs all the excess blood. But this could cause a rupture in the brain, so what does it do? Well, 3. It produces a fluid in the brain that produces a counterpressure to prevent this rupture from occurring. And 4. Just to make sure there's no other rupture anywhere else along the way, the walls of the giraffe's arteries just happen to be thicker than any other mammal.
Question: how could this ever evolve, like Charles Darwin said? And at what stage of development could the giraffe survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
Kangaroo. When the offspring of an Australian kangaroo is born, it is no larger than a bean and is blind, deaf, hairless, and looks somewhat like a tiny worm. And when it emerges from the birth canal, this baby ought to drop onto the ground and die right there. But for some reason, it knows that it needs to hold tightly to the fur of its mother and to start slowly crawling a sizable distance over to a pouch. And once the baby makes it to its mother's pouch, it fastens onto a nipple, and having done so, the nipple enlarges, locking the little creature tightly to it. And during this whole time, the mother usually doesn't even know the baby has been born, so she does nothing to help it in its journey. But that's not all. It also just so happens the kangaroo makes 2 kinds of milk simultaneously for 2 different nutritional needs. One for the newborn and one for a young kangaroo that's already outside the pouch but stopping in for some milk once in a while. And what's even more amazing is how the nipple feeding milk to the infant will automatically produce a different kind of milk than the one the older one drinks from, and it does this no matter which nipple it is.
Question: how could this birthing and feeding process ever evolve? And at what stage of development could the kangaroo's offspring survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
Antelopes and gazelles. Some antelope, like the oryx in Africa, live in the desert where the heat can rise easily to 110 degrees Fahrenheit. And it just so happens this creature has a built-in thermostat in its nose. As the temperature rises and the oryx gets hotter, an automatic nasal thermostat kicks in to increase blood flow to its small nasal veins. This air cools the blood before it goes to the brain, which keeps its temperature down. Then there's the pronghorn antelope in western United States. It lives in both hot summers and cold winters, so it just so happens to have both short fur and long hairs to survive both climates. Then the pronghorn also comes with a special signal system that can be seen by other antelope as far as 2 miles away. A special muscle in its rump pulls white hair over brown hair, and at a distance, the sudden change from white hair to brown looks like a flashing mirror which warns other antelope of approaching danger. And speaking of danger, the springbok gazelle of the Kalahari Desert of Africa is only 3 feet high, but every so often it will spring 10 to 12 feet straight up in the air so it can look for enemies at a distance, which is equivalent to a 6-foot man jumping 24 feet high. And if it spots an enemy, a white patch on its tail will go up, letting the others know to run away at speeds up to 60 miles per hour.
Question: how could these thermostat and warning systems ever evolve? And at what stage of development could the antelope and gazelles ever survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
Now,
the camel. Did you know the camel has one of the most efficient water conservation systems of any animal? The camel can go 2 weeks without water because it just so happens to have large bowels and kidneys that can conserve water, and a digestive system that can extract 40 times as much water than a normal animal. In fact, even its nose can catch and condense water in the air about to be exhaled. And then when food is scarce, the camel can arbitrarily change part of its wastes back into usable protein. And last but not least, the camel can readjust its body temperature by a full 12 degrees Fahrenheit, which is completely amazing because most animals would die on the spot with this amount of temperature change. Yet somehow the camels can.
Question: how could this water conservation and temperature adjustment ever evolve? And at what stage of development could the camel ever survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
The sloth. The sloths in South America not only spend most of their lives in trees, but they do so upside down. And it just so happens that all other mammals have fur that hangs downward from the top, but the hair of the sloth hangs the opposite. And this comes in handy because since the sloth likes to hang upside down, the upside down direction of its hair makes the rain roll right off. Then it just so happens that a certain green algae gets onto the coat of the three-toed sloth and lives there. This turns out to be helpful to the sloth, for it turns him green and hides him from enemies, making him look like a clump of leaves in the particular trees that he lives in. But in the very same forests there lives the two-toed sloth, and for some reason only a brown algae likes to make its home on him. And this just so happens to turn him the same brown color of the tree bark that he likes to live on, making him look like a piece of tree hanging down from a limb. The reason why this occurs is due to the difference of the hair structure on the two sloths. The cracks in the first type of hair seem to attract green algae, whereas the longitudinal grooves in the second type of hair are more favorable to brown algae.
Question: how could this hair direction and algae camouflage ever evolve? And at what stage of development could the sloth ever survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
The desert burrow. The desert burrow is 4 feet tall, weighs about 300 pounds, and lives in high heat all summer long. And what's interesting is how it can lose 75 pounds of water, or 30% of the water in its blood, before needing a drink without getting harmed. And this is amazing because the normal blood in mammals is 97% water, and if a man lost 6% of the water in his blood, he would fall unconscious, and if he lost 10% he would have a heart attack and die. Yet the desert burrow can lose 30% due to its special blood cells and a strong heart.
Question: how could these special blood cells and heart ever evolve? And at what stage of development could the desert burrow ever survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
The cow. Did you know there are millions of milk glands in the udder of a cow, and each day it drinks 25 gallons of water and produces 5 gallons of milk? But what's utterly amazing about the cow is that while people have one chamber in their stomach, cows have 4. And here's what they do with them. Grass is eaten and then enters the first chamber, which makes up 3/4 of the total stomach area, and just so happens to hold lots of water, which just so happens to help churn and ferment the food. But now the food passes into the second chamber, where a muscle pushes it back up the throat, and the cow chews on this cud to break it up even better. Then the cow swallows it again and pushes it into the third chamber, where the moisture is squeezed out of it. And from there it passes into the fourth chamber, where gallons of water are poured in, and strong acids break the food down for digestion in the intestines.
Question: how could these 4 stomachs ever evolve? And at what stage of development could the cow ever survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say those large-sized mammals clearly show, they not only were but they had to be intelligently designed by an intelligent creator. How about you? In fact, I'd say anybody who says they weren't, is acting like they're one taco short of a combination plate, you know what I'm saying? And gee whiz, I guess that's why astronomer George Greenstein said this.
Is it possible that suddenly, without intending to, we have stumbled upon scientific proof of the existence of a supreme being? As we survey all the evidence, the thought insistently arises that some supernatural agency must be involved.
Crone translation? If you think all of life, including those large-sized mammals, were created by chance, you're one taco short of a combination plate. Right? Isn't that what he's saying? Of course he is. Why? Because any intelligent person knows that design implies a what? A designer, right? And how many of you'd say when it comes to life it had to be God? Hey, great answer, you're so intelligent. Oh, but that's not all. The second group of animals showing God's intelligent design is the small-sized mammals. People, we're going to take a look at some interesting scientific facts about some of the smaller-sized mammals out there, and you tell me if they just accidentally burped onto the scene.
The bat. Did you know that bats are the only flying mammals in existence? They not only sleep during the day in caves and come out at night to hunt for food, but they have several interesting features that help them do so. First of all, their pelvic girdle is completely backwards to yours and mine, and its knees bend opposite to ours so that they can sleep, while hanging upside down. Then it just so happens that young bats come equipped with special teeth, with hooks on the inside of them which allow them to hold onto the thick hair on their mother's shoulders. They not only have this feature, but the instinct to use them, otherwise few would ever survive to adulthood. Also, the bats come equipped with sonar capabilities, which far surpasses man's copy of it. For instance, in a darkened room with fine wires strung across it, bats can easily fly about without ever touching them. This is because bats have complicated flaps of skin around their nostrils, and special structures in their ears, which they use to emit and receive high-frequency sound waves. They emit these frequencies up to 32,000 per second, which we cannot hear, which is good because it would drive us up a wall all night long. And their sonar capabilities are not just for getting around in the dark, but also for food. Bats can easily find flying insects in the dark, and thousands are caught every night. In fact, its sonar is so sensitive that it can detect fruit flies 100 feet away and catch as many as 5 per second. And some bats can focus their sonar in a narrow beam, or turn their heads from side to side to make a sweep of the area, or even use it to find fish underwater.
Question. How could these backward bones and baby teeth and sonar capabilities ever evolve? And at what stage of development could the bat ever survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same
time? The pocket gopher. This little fellow comes equipped with big cheeks with pouches in them, which extend from below its eyes all the way down to its shoulders. These act as a kind of grocery sack for the food it finds, which it chews and swallows later. But that's not all. It also digs very rapidly, long shallow tunnels, each of which may extend 50 feet, because it has long sharp claws. But since the wear on those claws is terrific, they need to be fast growing. Well, it just so happens they do. Its front claws grow 20 inches a year. But crawling around through the dirt is hard on the eyes, so it just so happens the gopher has a gland near each eye, which produces a jelly-like substance. This jelly coats the eye, and when it blinks, the dirt falls off, and then the eye is recoated by fresh jelly. But then this fat-cheeked gopher needs to crawl around its tunnels. So it runs both forward and backward through the dark curving tunnels, yet never runs into the walls because he feels the sides with its tail. In fact, the gopher can both bite and dig at the same time without getting dirt in its mouth because it's able to close its lips behind its teeth.
Question. How could these storage cheeks, rapid-growing claws and dirt-preventing eye jelly ever evolve? And at what stage of development could the gopher ever survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
The koala. The koala is a 2-foot-tall 20-pound animal that spends its entire life in eucalyptus trees, eating eucalyptus leaves. When baby koalas are born, they look like tiny worms, crawl into the mother's pouch, 6 months later emerge 8 inches long, and crawl onto their mother's backs, and remain there for another 6 months. And believe it or not, all the food and water of this animal come from eucalyptus leaves. The only problem is, eucalyptus leaves are poisonous if swallowed. But it just so happens the koala has a special stomach acid, which neutralizes the strong chemicals in eucalyptus oil, making it safe and nutritious to eat.
Question. How could these birthing abilities and this anti-food poisoning mechanism ever evolve? And at what stage of development could the koala ever survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
The river otter. This otter may be slow on land, but it's one of the fastest mammals in the water. The river otter has 36 special whiskers attached to nerve pads in its cheeks as it swims rapidly through muddy water. So how does it find food in muddy water? Well, it just so happens that these whiskers enable it to sense the faint shock waves sent out by passing fish, and from that sensation it can tell what type of fish it is and where it went. In fact, with its paws, the otter digs for crayfish and can locate them by sensing their body electricity. And when the river is covered with ice, the otter will go up beneath the ice and breathe out, and then take the air back in and breathe out again to melt and weaken the ice so it can break through.
Question: how could these electric sensing whiskers and the ability to know how to melt the ice to survive ever evolve? And at what stage of development could the otter ever survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
Platypus. The platypus has fur-like velvet, a beaver-like tail, and a soft duckish-looking bill. Like the otter, it catches its food with its ears and eyes firmly shut in the muddy water. So how does it find food? Well, it just so happens that its duckish-looking bill acts as a highly tuned receptor that picks up the weak electric fields of the shrimps and worms it eats, even if they are under mud or rocks. Its beaver-like tail helps it to swim fast, and when disturbed it growls like a puppy, or rumbles like a hen pulled from her nest. Its short legs have strong claws and webbed feet, but unlike a duck it can roll this webbing up into its palms to free its claws for digging, which is needed to burrow into the bank so the mother can lay her eggs. The mother usually lays her eggs in pairs, but sometimes three are laid, and when this is so, they are always attached in a triangle. When the babies are born, the babies get milk from their mother, not from nipples but from tufts of hair. Then the young platypuses develop spurs on the inside of their hind legs. In the female these later disappear, but in the male they develop into defensive poison spurs, which makes the platypus the world's only venomous furred creature.
Question: how could these part beaver, part duck, part poisonous traits ever evolve? And at what stage of development could the platypus ever survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
The armadillo. Armadillos have eyes like a pig, the tail of a rat, ears like a mule, and armored scales, which look something like an alligator. They have extra movable parts between the vertebrae in their lower back, which gives them flexibility while digging and the ability to do so fast that they disappear into the soil almost faster than you can write a sentence about it. In fact, it can also roll itself up into a ball, armor and all, and even detect worms and insects as deep as 8 inches in the ground. They also have a sophisticated heat exchange system, which enables them to keep the heat trapped in the trunk of their bodies while allowing the limbs to cool through a specialized network of blood vessels meshed. And because the armadillo's armor is quite heavy, one might expect them to avoid water. But on the contrary, when faced with a body of water, the armadillo simply sucks in enough air to inflate its stomach and intestines, which makes it stay afloat. Or it may just decide to walk across the bottom of a stream bed by holding its breath for as long as 6 minutes. In fact, the nine-banded armadillo only bears identical quadruplets of the same sex, and all from one egg that splits after fertilization.
Question: how could these digging, swimming, heat exchange systems, as well as the ability to only give birth to quadruplets ever evolve? And at what stage of development could the armadillo ever survive unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say those smaller sized mammals clearly show they not only were but they had to be intelligently designed by an intelligent creator. How about you? In fact, I'd say anybody who says they weren't, is acting like they're dumber than a box of hair, you know what I'm saying? And gee whiz, I guess that's why physicist Tony Rothman said this.
When confronted with the order and beauty of the universe and the strange coincidences of nature, it's very tempting to take the leap of faith from science into religion. I am sure many physicists want to. I only wish they would admit it.
Prone translation? If you think all of life, including small-sized mammals, were created by chance, you're dumber than a box of hair. Right? Isn't that what he's saying? Of course he is. Why? Because any intelligent person knows that design implies a what? A designer, right? And how many of you'd say when it comes to life it had to be God? Hey, great answer, you're so intelligent. Oh, but that's not all. The third group of animals showing God's intelligent design is the birds. People, we're going to take a look at some interesting scientific facts about some of the flying creatures out there, and you tell me if they accidentally hatched onto the scene. But we'll take a look at that in the next chapter.